Crenshaw, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. People in Japan ducking for cover as strong earthquake shook the west coast, the largest west of Tokyo, measuring a magnitude 7.6. Officials have issued a tsunami warning with possible wave heights topping 16 feet. The BBC's Jean McKenzie.
Now, one of the biggest concerns, of course, is the nuclear power plants that Japan has. And you'll remember that nuclear disaster in Fukushima back in 2011, which was triggered by an enormous earthquake. Now, there are five power plants in this warning region, but at the moment there is no report to any damage of them, and there's been no reported increase in radiation levels. But as you can imagine, the officials and the relevant authorities there are monitoring them very closely.
Fighting in Ukraine and Gaza has rolled into 2024. This little girl spoke through an interpreter.
I hope that the war would end soon. I hope we can return to our homes, go back to school, return to everything that is familiar in the new year.
According to the UN, more than 90% of Palestinians in Gaza say they've regularly gone without food for an entire day. The Pentagon says the U.S. sank at least three boats that were waging an attack on a container ship in the Red Sea. The ship had issued a distress call blaming Iranian-backed Houthi militants. The Houthis have acknowledged 10 of their fighters were killed. In New York City, overseas wars on the minds of revelers and protesters. CBS's Wendy Gillette in Times Square for the ball drop.
Security was tighter this year, in part because of Israel's war against Hamas. The NYPD kept a protest in support of Palestinians far away from Times Square. There were also demonstrations in Chicago, Boston, and other cities around the world.
Dozens of people have been burned out of their New York City apartments. This neighbor saw flames shooting from a building next door.
I heard the boom, boom, boom. And when I came on out and back on the other side of the building, it's on fire.
Fire officials say two children and several firefighters are among the seven injured. The incident linked to fireworks. New laws are kicking in across the country this January 1st. Among them,
a new voting law in Michigan that now grants voters an extra 9 days for early voting, creates easier vote by mail options, and provides access to drop boxes.
David Atkins, who heads the Council of State Government, says Michigan is among many battleground states that passed similar bills. Markets are closed this New Year's Day. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Buggyhout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's economy is ending the year in good shape. The state's unemployment rate is 3.3%. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development says a record 3 million people were working in Wisconsin at the end of November. The Journal Sentinel reports that the biggest problem with Wisconsin's economy is not enough workers to fill job openings. The flu, RSV, and COVID-19 are running high in Wisconsin. Dr. Tom Haupt is Wisconsin's chief epidemiologist.
There's no indication that there's any kind of plateau going on, that we are leveling out. Everything is still on a pretty steep increase over the past few weeks.
Two children under the age of 5 died from RSV in Wisconsin last week. I'm Nate Wuggyhout, Civic Media News.
Packers crushed the Vikings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers dominated the Vikings 33-10 on New Year's Eve and keep their playoff hopes alive. The Packers defense held the Vikings' Justin Jefferson to just 5 catches for 59 yards and no touchdowns. With Eric Stokes suffering another hamstring injury and Jair Alexander suspended, I asked defensive back Corey Ballantyne, when did he learn that he would get to play?
Oh, I had no idea. I had no idea till maybe Saturday.
Ballantyne intercepting a Jaren Hall pass that set up a touchdown for the Packers' Jaden Reed. Hall was making his first start at quarterback at home for the Vikings here at U.S. Bank Stadium.
I just couldn't get into a rhythm. I couldn't spit the ball around the field consistently. Just didn't have a good feel on it.
Packers linebacker Preston Smith.
Guys were causing pressure. Guys were not letting the quarterback be comfortable. He's not allowing big plays to happen. There's just a lot of great things happening with the defense today.
Preston, what's the best thing you think your defense did tonight?
We finished the game strong.
That's Packers linebacker Preston Smith. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to 35 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, it'll be clear. Our low, 27. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, 37. And then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 35. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 24.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome to a special edition of Up North News Radio as we hearken back to some of the stories and guests that made 2023 a special year for us. Did I say hearken back? There's another one of those old man words for Greg to write down as we try to figure out how I came to be a man of 59 with the vocabulary of someone closer to 99. I didn't want to say look back on the year because, you know, it's radio and that whole look back thing. So hearken, we got that. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. Stories and guests of 2023. Well, over the summer, we noted that 2023 marks 75 years since 1948, and the political Richter scale that signified an earthquake between the Democratic and Republican parties on the issue of civil rights. The quake was centered in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. There was a Minnesota senator at the center of it all, but it was only made possible because of a once and future congressman from Wisconsin. So we're going to take a few minutes to set the scene before we play back our interview with author Samuel Friedman and his book about a pivotal speech that Hubert Humphrey gave at that 1948 Democratic Convention with the help of once and future Congressman Andrew B. Miller of Wisconsin. At some point, you have probably heard someone on the far right say something like this: Republicans are the party of Lincoln and Democrats are the party of segregationists. They like to say that as a defense mechanism when they do things like, you know, try to ban books or classes that teach a more complete and honest history of race relations in the United States. That's when you hear the, you know, we're the party of Lincoln and Democrats, they're the segregationists. And anyone who is still saying that today has either not studied history or more likely is conveniently omitting the role reversal that got its start in 1948 and carried through to Barry Goldwater, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and Donald Trump in the evolution of race-based politics in the modern GOP. It is true that from Reconstruction through the early part of the 20th century, Democrats at that time were the party of segregation and worse, blocking any efforts to achieve racial equality or ban discrimination in housing and employment, or even make lynching illegal. But here's the thing. Political parties were much more complex until fairly recently. When was the last time you heard of a liberal Republican? Just not so much anymore, or conservative Democrat, for that matter. The parties were so much less homogeneous than they are today. There were divisions based on social issues as well as economic issues. Democrats were then, as they are today, much more aligned with America's working class, while Republicans more likely represent the corporate class. But then within those parties, you'd have divisions on social matters. And as the 20th century unfolded, you had a growing number of Democrats getting less comfortable with the racist bent of their otherwise blue-collar party. You saw a Democratic leader saying that many Black workers are seeing that Democrats are better on economic issues than the so-called Party of Lincoln, and it's time to get them on our side. It's time to do more than just talk about civil rights. It's time to live up to our nation's ideals. And that's where we find Minneapolis electing a young, dynamic mayor, Hubert Humphrey, who pledges to clean up the crime and fight discrimination. His efforts faced stiff opposition over the years, but he persevered and he was getting increasingly noticed. Unfortunately, as we still experience today, political realities will keep many folks from being true to themselves in order to achieve or stay in power. Franklin Roosevelt and then Harry Truman talked a good game, but they often couched their language and didn't fight nearly as hard as they could have to take on discrimination, segregation, and violence, because doing so would cost them the Southern Democrats, who shared economic values, but for white folks only. Humphrey was all for FDR and Truman, but wished they had the will to do more on civil rights. And in 1948, there came a chance to force Truman and the party to do more. When 1948 began, almost nobody thought Harry Truman could win a four-year term in his own right. Democrats had been clobbered in the 1946 midterms. Northern Democrats saw only one way to avoid catastrophe, and that was to more fully embrace civil rights and attract enough Black voters and allies to make a difference in key states. Now, Truman and his team didn't agree. They wanted the party platform at the Philadelphia Convention to contain the same watered-down language as in 1944. That was not going to work for people like A. Philip Randolph, whose labor organizing started in the large union of sleeping car porters. He was a constant presence pushing for Black representation in factories during World War II. And by 1948, as the draft was getting set to organize again after a post-war lull, Randolph and others were talking openly about urging Black men not to register for the draft. Why fight anymore for a country that sent them overseas to fight and die, and then just picked up after the war where they left off with segregation and violence? Humphrey would be the face of the new civil rights movement among Democratic elected officials. He and others would try to force the Democratic Party to adopt a plank in its platform that was much stronger on civil rights. Initially, they failed. The platform committee at the convention shot them down. But Humphrey and then former Wisconsin Congressman Andrew B. Miller knew they had another path. B. Miller knew how to work the convention rules to allow Humphrey to speak to the full convention during the platform debate, speak in favor of what was called a minority report, and urge the full convention to adopt that minority report to the platform rather than the weak language adopted by the platform committee. Hubert Humphrey's short remarks, honed over hundreds of speeches around the Midwest and around the country, electrified most of the crowd. He reminded them that the language they were seeking in the platform had actually been endorsed by Truman in the past, even though he hadn't been as forceful as he could have been. They weren't insurgents so much as they were simply fighting for their fellow Americans. And that's where we meet up with author Samuel Friedman and his book, Into the Bright Sunshine, Young Hubert Humphrey and the Fight for Civil Rights.
Well, Hubert Humphrey was one of the most important civil rights leaders in this country for a long period of time, especially during the 1940s, which is kind of this overlooked but really essential period of civil rights activity. Humphrey was right there alongside people like A. Philip Randolph, the great Black labor and civil rights leaders, and Walter White, the NAACP, in pushing forward on civil rights in a decade when fighting the war against global fascism had inevitably raised the question of what America was going to do about the forms of intolerance and racial supremacy and religious bigotry here in the homeland. And he was one of the most important voices on that issue. And starting out as mayor in Minneapolis, just a few miles up 94 from where you are in Chippewa Falls, he made Minneapolis a national model of progress on civil rights, coming out of a period when Minneapolis had been deservedly reviled as one of the most discriminatory cities in the whole country against Blacks and also against Jews.
Why was it him in 1948? Was it a case of, you know, let this young upstart mayor, let him go out there and commit political suicide? Or was he indeed a motivator and a leader, you know, who, matched the expectations others put in him?
The answer, Pat, is both. He was on a mission, and I've often said that the question was whether it was a political suicide mission, but he firmly believed in it. Harry Truman was of two minds heading into the 48 election. Partly, he was advancing on civil rights, and then the closer he got to the election, the more he wanted to back away and just kick that can down the road the way FDR had. And you also had Southern segregationists saying, we're going to bolt from the party if you do anything on civil rights. And then finally, you had A. Philip Randolph, who I mentioned before, leading a mass movement to have Black young men not register for the draft or not serve unless Harry Truman desegregated the military. And so into this turmoil, here's Humphrey as part of an insurgency within the Democratic Party, pushing a real civil rights plank, something that explicitly says, we're going to integrate the military, we're going to have fair employment practices, we're going to put an end to lynching, and so forth. And partly because of his emerging national reputation, and partly because of his great oratorical skills, he's given the task of selling this platform plank to the whole convention. That happens July 14th, 1948. And it's not just that he's talking to 1,500 delegates and alternates, and it's not just that he's talking to 15,000 people in the convention hall. Believe it or not, there are 70 million people watching on TV or listening on radio to that speech in real time. It's like the Super Bowl in terms of audience.
Let's get to the Wisconsin tie for a moment here and start in Wisconsin. Now, we know one of Wisconsin's U.S. senators back then was Joseph McCarthy, and history has given him all the scorn he deserves, and we can get to him. But I also want to make note that Wisconsin's other senator at the time, Alexander Wiley, was from right here in Chippewa Falls. And so I wanted to know, between Wiley, McCarthy, other Wisconsin figures, you know, to what degree did they figure either into Humphrey's moves or other either support or opposition to embracing civil rights?
Well, there's a great Wisconsin angle here that I'm very happy to share. You know, Humphrey couldn't just stand up and give the speech because he wanted to give the speech. There was a whole complicated process of how you put a platform plank up to all the delegates. And it wasn't easy to do, especially when the incumbent president wanted to have this quashed in committee. And one of Humphrey's most important allies was a labor leader and former member of Congress from Milwaukee, and former member before that of state legislature, named Andrew B. Miller.
And when we come back, the role played by Wisconsin Congressman Andrew B. Miller at that historic turning point in U.S. political history. Then in our next half hour, Lee Rosch of La Crosse and former Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt on Keep Our Republic, a bipartisan group dedicated to preserving American democracy, here at another historic turning point in this nation's great experiment. The best of Up North News Radio continues in just a moment.
If you can't listen live, listen later as a podcast, wherever you get your favorite shows. Up North News Radio will be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Now back to highlights of our July conversation with author Samuel Friedman. His book was about the pivotal role of Hubert Humphrey in the Democratic Party's embrace of civil rights. But we left off with the invaluable help he received from former and future Wisconsin Congressman Andrew B. Miller.
One of Humphrey's most important allies was a labor leader and former member of Congress from Milwaukee and former member before that of state legislature named Andrew B. Miller, who everyone called Andy. And Andy B. Miller was an expert in parliamentary procedure. And not only was he allied with Humphrey on civil rights, but he understood all these abstruse and intricate rules on how, even if you had lost on your platform plank in the the platform committee, which Humphrey had, you could get a second chance speaking to the whole convention. And it actually shocked Truman's people who were running the convention that Andy B. Miller knew how to maneuver it so that Humphrey could get to give the speech. And he and Humphrey had been planning this out for weeks ahead. Heading into the convention, Humphrey goes down to the Milwaukee area where Andy B. Miller has a house a little bit outside Milwaukee, sort of in the Pewaukee area, if not in Pewaukee itself. And they map out, here's how we're going to make sure that we are able to give the speech, even if we lose at an earlier stage. So B. Miller is one of the unsung heroes of this. And of course, the Wisconsin delegation at the convention votes in favor of this plank. As you said, this was a really key issue in many parts of the country, not just states that had a large number of Black voters, where you had a lot of big city political bosses saying, we've got to endorse civil rights because we've got to improve turnout, or not only are we going to lose the presidency, but we're going to lose all the down ballot races. But you had states like Wisconsin with this, you know, progressive and liberal tradition, also unfortunately that counter tradition of people like Joe McCarthy, but at least in the Democratic Party, a tradition that wanted to keep moving forward with a liberal agenda. And civil rights in 48 was the key part of that agenda.
B. Miller knew how to work the convention rules to allow Humphrey to speak to the full convention during the platform debate, speak in favor of what was called a minority report, and urge the full convention to adopt that minority report to the platform rather than the weak language adopted by the platform committee. Hubert Humphrey's short remarks, honed over hundreds of speeches around the Midwest and around the country, electrified most of the crowd. He reminded them that the language they were seeking in the platform had actually been endorsed by Truman in the past, even though he hadn't been as forceful as he could have been. They weren't insurgents so much as they were simply fighting for their fellow Americans.
To those who say, my friends, to those who say that we are rushing this issue of civil rights, I say to them, we are 172 years late. To those who say that this civil rights program is an infringement on states' rights, I say this: the time has arrived in America for the Democratic Party to get out of the shadows of states' rights and to walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights.
It was as if all at once, these timid woodland creatures of the Democratic Party were given permission to be true to themselves, or at the very least, to think about the political strategy involved. Initially, the minority report strategy was a Hail Mary with little chance of success. To get a majority would have required 618 delegate votes. It ended up getting 651 and was adopted. It wasn't the path Harry Truman wanted to take, but once it was out there, the president embraced it. Within 2 weeks, he publicly pursued long-dormant policies to fight discrimination. And while many Southern Democrats broke away, many for good, the uptick of votes in the North gave Truman an improbable win. Hubert Humphrey was elected to the Senate. Andrew B. Miller won back the seat in Congress he'd lost in 46. And Democrats, as Humphrey put it, finally got out of the shadow of states' rights in order to walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights.
That's the realignment we're living with now. That moment sets Democrats enduringly on the path to being a multiracial, interfaith party of inclusive democracy. When the Dixiecrats, Southern Democrats, leave, that's the beginning of the process that will lead them to become Republicans, starting with Barry Goldwater in 64, Nixon in 68, Reagan in 80, and now Donald Trump, in 16 and 20 and probably 24 as well. So it is when the script gets flipped. And it's so intellectually dishonest to say that the Democrats still are the party of segregation. When they ousted their extremists in 1948, they did what the Republicans have been totally unwilling to do with Trump and with the Trump movement, which is kick out the crazies, kick out the bigots.
Right. And it's not a given that the GOP would simply accept having the script flipped and allow itself to become the modern day bastion of opposition to civil rights, voting rights, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and even an honest teaching of American history. So what led the party of Lincoln to become the party of Lee Atwater and Karl Rove and now Donald Trump?
Well, the first thing that happens is you have the Goldwater insurgency in 64. That's the kind of the beginning of the rise of the new right, even though by today's standards, Goldwater would probably be in the Lincoln Project. But Goldwater comes out against civil rights laws. He doesn't seem to be personally bigoted, but he makes this argument of quote unquote states' rights. And that's a dog whistle to Southern segregationists to vote for him, especially when he's running against LBJ in 64, who's already pushed through, with Hubert Humphrey's help, the Civil Rights Act of 64. Although Goldwater loses massively, it's a sign that Republicans can get votes from the segregationists of the South. And Richard Nixon then in 68, who'd previously been pretty progressive on civil rights. In fact, Martin Luther King almost endorsed Nixon for president in 1960. Richard Nixon runs on the so-called Southern strategy, which means, again, to appeal to this opposition to civil rights in the South. And moves forward on that progress. Ronald Reagan, again, someone who I don't think at a personal level was a bigot, but is willing to play that card, starts the 1980 campaign with rally in Philadelphia, Mississippi, near the place where the three civil rights martyrs, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman, were murdered by white vigilantes. So this is all a process that moves along. And even though there are some Republican candidates who push against it, and try to bring it back towards the party of Lincoln, like John McCain, and with all of his other flaws, George W. Bush, I think, was the best Republican president on race since Lincoln. But they lose control of the party, and now we are where we are. And that's a point where you can't even teach honestly about slavery anymore.
Samuel Friedman is an award-winning professor, columnist, author of 9 acclaimed books, a staff reporter from the New York Times from 81 to 87, and so much more. And the book, again, is called Into the Bright Sunshine, Young Hubert Humphrey and the Fight for Civil Rights. Sam, thank you so much.
My good friend, I ask my party, I ask the Democratic Party, to march down the high road of progressive democracy. I ask this convention to say in unmistakable terms that we proudly hail and we courageously support our president and leader, Harry Truman, in his great fight for civil rights in America.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. A series of powerful earthquakes shook up the west coast of Japan this morning, the largest measuring a 7.6 magnitude. CBS's Lucy Kraft.
It was strong enough to buckle and put cracks in roads. The weaker housing very badly hit.
A tsunami warning's been issued for the coast, where officials say waves could reach 16 feet. Wars in Ukraine and Gaza have dragged into 2024. CBS's Bradley Blackburn.
As the new year began, the war continued. Skies over Gaza lit up after midnight with flares and explosions, while Hamas fired rockets at Israel.
Celebrations across the U.S. Fireworks lit up the sky over Las Vegas and New York, where anti-war protesters also lined the streets.
There's a lot of policemen, it's everywhere, so I really, really feel safely.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
News is sponsored by Current Electric, home of the superhero. Current Electric, the pioneer in solar energy for residential and commercial in the state. Go to callcurrent.com for more information.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Lawyers for Republican lawmakers are asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to reconsider its ruling that the state's legislative maps are unconstitutional. The Republicans argue the court's January 12th deadline for proposing new maps is rushed. Boundaries need to be in place by March 15th for next fall's state house races. Smart toys are popular holiday gifts, but they may be recording conversations or collecting personal information or tracking where you are.
They have microphones or cameras, or they connect to an app, or they're Wi-Fi enabled or Bluetooth. They have geolocators, which is a whole thing. So parents really need to ask a lot of questions when it comes to these smart toys.
Teresa Murray is with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
This is Chuck Smith, founder of Current Electric. I want to thank you, Southeast Wisconsin, for making us number one electrical service company in our area. From residential and commercial to all things solar. Do you know the number one reason people call Current Electric? It is trust. We answer the call. They trust our heroes in their home and businesses. With 8,500 five-star reviews and growing, I'm so very proud of our team of heroes. Go to callcurrent.com. That's callcurrent.com. Home of the superheroes.
Mostly sunny today. We'll get to 35 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, it'll be clear. Our low, 27. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, 37. And then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 35. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 24.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org, brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
After finishing Samuel Friedman's book, I had these observations I wanted to share with you. First, this book, this is not the story of Hubert Humphrey single-handedly doing a great deed on behalf of civil rights. It's an intimate look at his role and one shining moment as part of a group of heroes, some of whom had larger and more heroic roles. Their stories also deserve to be told in greater depth if they haven't already. Second, we don't pay enough due to those who were socially liberal but adamantly anti-communist. A group, by the way, that nowadays would be considered perfectly normal, perfectly American, but it was truly a tortured minority in its day. We underappreciate how FDR and others steered this country through the Depression, where we could have ended up embracing communism like Russia or fascism like Germany. Because democracy and capitalism, they're not preordained, and they're not guaranteed to last. We have certainly discovered that over the past few years, haven't we? The goal for Humphrey and other civil rights leaders was affirmation. Their victory gave many people, from President Truman to lifelong Republican voters, permission to stop hedging on human rights. We'd see Lyndon Johnson move from obstructionist to pragmatist to leader on the issue during his journey from Senate to vice president to president. And by the way, affirmation also explains Trump. Remember, once upon a time, everyone thought he was a show business clown, but as a few more people and a few more people bought into his brand of blaming others for their tough times, it gave affirmation to others to give him a try. Now, hopefully, unlike certain leaders back in the 1930s, we can now see the folly of Trump's style and put it back into the dustbin of wannabe dictators. While this is all about one speech 75 years ago and the supporting role played by one Wisconsinite, much more needs to be said some other day about Wisconsin's civil rights journey of its own. It didn't play out on a national stage like that in Philadelphia, but there are heroes in Wisconsin's story that need to be talked about as well. Vell Phillips, Father James Groppi, and many, many more. It's a journey still very much in progress. De facto segregation in where people live, in how our children are educated, in the activities of police and the courts, in health care, job opportunities, and more. And there is pushback here in Wisconsin from those who use the same language as we heard back then. We're not discriminating, they'll tell you. We're protecting our cultures. We're protecting our traditions. We're protecting our children. They'll accuse you of being racist for wanting to tackle the racism and bigotry that comes when you're censoring teachers, withholding funds, micromanaging education, employment, and even your health care. Andrew Biemiller, for his part, went on to become a legend within the AFL-CIO. He was there from 1953 to 1978. He was at the forefront of union advocacy for civil rights, Medicare, and lots of other legislation designed for working Americans. He passed away in 1982, 4 years after Hubert Humphrey. Together, 75 years ago, they helped trigger a tsunami of affirmation for a party and for a country that was ready to take steps toward a better future. I am grateful to Samuel Friedman for helping us share that story with you this morning. Now let's bring in former Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt, who has been on a speaking tour, including stopped in La Crosse, Green Bay, and Eau Claire, about the fairly simple premise of, you know, making democracy bipartisan again. Congressman Gephardt, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, nice to hear from you. I know a lot of folks in Wisconsin got to know you, not only as House Democratic leader, but during a presidential campaign. Certainly times when you were working with members of Congress from Wisconsin, you know, the Dave Obies and Ron Kynes and folks like that. So you're definitely a familiar enough presence here that I'm sure you had some positive response as you returned to Wisconsin to talk to people about the state of democracy. And let me start with that, because I know we've talked about it a lot. I hope it's not stating the obvious, But our democracy, we've learned over the past couple of years, is a little more fragile than I think a lot of people assumed, isn't it?
It sure is. And that's why I was in Wisconsin. And I'm part of a group we call Keep Our Republic, which is solely dedicated to making sure we can continue to have valid, trusted elections, which is the kind of the cornerstone or the foundation of a democracy. And we're worried about it because, as you just said, in the last few years, there has been real cracks in our ability to have good elections. And most importantly, people are beginning to not trust our elections. And that's a fatal problem if you don't correct it. So we're working in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan in local communities. This is not just a statewide effort, it's a local effort to try to bring people together, both Republicans and Democrats and independents, who are worried about this and want to know what they can do in their local area to make sure we have good elections.
Yeah, because that faith in democracy should only be undermined by anything that's based in fact. And I think there's an important point to be made here, is that if there were actual evidence of funny business, of something untoward in our elections, I 100% believe you would have both Democrats as well as Republicans saying, what is this? We've got to get rid of this. But as has been said over and over again, the problem is that the accusations that have been made in light of 2020 simply had no factual basis, and that's what makes them so dangerous.
That's exactly right. If you put out non-factual information that the election was broken, stolen, defrauded, then you break people's trust. And we've always had conspiracy theories in the country. That's kind of a common thing. Nothing new about that. But when it really gets legs and people really begin to believe it, even though it's not factual, it's not supported by the facts, then you've got a problem. It's a perception problem, not a factual problem, but you got to deal with perception. And if you just let it go and people continue to erode in their belief and their faith in your ability to have a good election, then the democracy is really done. And that's what we're most worried about. We came within an inch of having a broken election in 2022, but only because 10 or 12 both Republican and Democratic people, election officials, secretaries of state, Mike Pence, did what the right thing to do. They did the right thing. They stood up for the process being fair and valid. We would have had a broken election.
So let's shift over to what you are doing now. You mentioned the group that you're working with, and that you and your and that organization work with other civic groups to promote trust in the strength of the Republic and its institutions. What are these sessions like? Who are the folks that are showing up? In other words, do you feel like you're preaching to the already converted, or are you in fact essentially giving these folks the tools they need to help spread the word about ways to strengthen trust in our democracy?
That's a great question. So in the initial phase here, we're going into local communities like Eau Claire and Green Bay and La Crosse, and we're pulling together groups of, I guess you could call them leaders, but very diverse people, very nonpartisan, bipartisan people, people who have experience in the community, who are trusted voices in the community from both ends of the spectrum, and that can give us a sense of what's happening in that community on the ground right now in this question of democracy. And then what more can we do and what more can they do? They really have to do it. We're not from Wisconsin. We don't live in Wisconsin. The people in the community have to do this. And so we're forming groups that we hope will keep active and keep going. We've done this in Pennsylvania and a number of communities. These groups are now working on their own without us at all. We're just kind of the convener, we're the warning system that this thing is in trouble and we got to do something about it as citizens of this country. So we had great meetings and we came up with great ideas. We're going to keep talking about those ideas, refine them. One of the ideas that we got, I think, in La Crosse was, can we do messaging out to the general public in that region about the election process, how it works, how it can be threatened, what are the unconventional threats to it, to just give people an understanding, a better understanding of how the process works and how it can work and how it will work in 2024.
That was Missouri Congressman and former House Democratic leader Dick Gephardt from back in March. Next, we'll fast forward to July and hear from one of the VIPs at that La Crosse event, Lee Roche, the former longtime head at Western Wisconsin Technical College and a former candidate for Congress. Taking part in something like this was not on his original retirement bucket list, as you can imagine, but he felt the stakes were too high. Too many Americans right here in Wisconsin were losing faith in the entire system of small d Democratic elections. And while many, myself included, are taking time to assess blame for that, others like Roche and Gephardt and the Republicans and Democrats working with Keep Our Republic are quite rightly recognizing the need to restore trust in a more bipartisan manner, answering people's questions, cutting through the misinformation, and helping them understand that competition among ideas and among candidates and among parties is natural. But undermining democracy by casting doubts on elections that are already free and fair, that's below the belt. That should never be normalized.
Our democracy or our democratic republic is really based on a very important principle that we allow our elections by the people to determine who our leaders will be in government. And the cornerstone of that is our belief in the integrity of that process. And in Wisconsin, we actually have, it's been thoroughly reviewed and audited. We have a very, very robust and healthy electoral system. And so it's important for us to promote that and help people prepare for upcoming elections so that we maintain the integrity and our belief in the integrity of the American Democratic Republic.
And although, again, I'm talking to you, you had run for Congress once as a Democrat. I talked to Richard Gephardt, the Democratic leader in Congress. This is very much a bipartisan effort. And one of your cohorts at the Wisconsin level leading this group is Kathy Bernier, a Republican who served in the state Senate seat that I served in the legislature. And she is one of several Republicans who also believes very strongly in this mission.
It's true. And our group has representatives from different political views, but there's a common belief. There's a significant concern that the growing political divide is breaking down trust in basic institutions and the important cornerstones of our democracy. And so it's that common belief that's pulling people together to try to take this effort on and ensure that the 2024 election is a positive and healthy experience.
That's Lee Roche from Keep Our Republic. Coming up next, more from the best of Up North News Radio and our favorite 2023 guests. To catch our daily work, head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner, and you'll get our daily newsletter early every weekday morning as well, and search for Up North News WI on your favorite social media sites for updates throughout the day. More after this, you're up north.
The Shaw, W-A-U-K.
Robert Hack Diamonds pays cash for your unwanted gold, silver, and even diamonds. That's right. Robert Hack Diamonds wants to make you an offer on your gold, silver, and diamonds. The process is very simple. No appointment needed. Just come on in, sit down in a nice, relaxed atmosphere, and the staff of Robert Hack Diamonds will evaluate your unwanted gold, silver, and diamonds and make you an offer on the spot. Then you can decide if you want a deal or no deal. Robert Hack Diamonds can also convert your old jewelry into something new or trade in your outdated pieces for something new and exciting. Many people inherit jewelry that might not be your taste, but you are sentimental. Why not have Robert Hack Diamonds take the golden gems and create something for you? So many options at Robert Hack Diamonds. Again, Robert Hack Diamonds pays cash for your unwanted gold, silver, and diamonds. See them in Brookfield just east of Moreland on Greenland Avenue or 76 in Layton, right on the corner in Greenfield. RobertHackDiamonds.com.
This is The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
The election of Justice Janet Protasiewicz to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in April is arguably the story of the year for 2023. And it laid the groundwork for another candidate for story of the year, the recent ruling from the court, now controlled by progressives, that the state's gerrymandered legislative maps are unconstitutional. There will be legal filings and appeals, to be sure, but the big story is that 12 years after such blatantly, nakedly corrupt maps were first drawn, they are closer than ever to finally being scrapped so that voters can choose their lawmakers, instead of Republican lawmakers choosing who they want voters to be stuck with. Back in April, we talked to Sam Wong, a professor of neuroscience and director of the Electoral Innovation Lab at the Princeton Gerrymandering Project, a nonpartisan effort to use computer modeling, math, and statistics to understand how politicians separate groups of people into districts that are quantifiably fair or unfair. He outlined various legal arguments that could come up in a Supreme Court case, including contiguity, the reason behind December's landmark ruling.
Partisan gerrymandering has been with us for a long time. Ever since the first gerrymander, named after Elbridge Gerry back in 1812, parties have long sought to get an advantage over the other side. But in the modern age of voting rights, like say the last 60 or 70 years, when we understand that one person should have one vote, when we understand that all citizens should have some kind of voice, in the modern era of voting rights, gerrymandering of a partisan nature got the worst it ever got in 2010 in half a dozen states across America, and it became a principal tool by which one party could gain dominance over the other party. And Wisconsin is right at the front of the class when it comes to that kind of offense.
So let's set up the legal case behind this again, not the Supreme Court race. We've heard about that. Janet Protasiewicz was the victor. She cited the way that the maps are rigged. Let's go back to the legal case, because it's kind of like, Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones. Sometimes they made you wait like 2 years to pick up where we left off. So if you'll forgive me for sounding like an announcer on a soap opera, you know, previously on Gill v. Whitford, this case from Wisconsin went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court essentially said, we at the federal level are not going to define a partisan gerrymander, but if you guys at the state level want to figure it out, try to figure it out. And that to me seems where we've been kind of left, and you seem to be picking up the baton and saying, here's how states can define a partisan gerrymander and start to try to slay it. Is that a fair interpretation of where we're at from a legal standpoint?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think starting in 2012 with what I wrote a column and I called that the Great Gerrymander of 2012. At that time, a lot of us in the reform space had hoped there could be a uniform standard that could be defined by the Supreme Court that could apply to Republicans, could apply to Democrats, could apply to anyone who attempted to gain an advantage through gerrymandering. And the funny thing about the Supreme Court is that with the Gill versus Whitford case, and then later in a case not involving Wisconsin called Rucho versus Common Cause, the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion, and he basically said, gerrymandering is bad. I would say if you look at his opinion, it sounds like he thinks it might violate the Constitution, and then said, we're just not going to go there. The word was non-justiciable. And non-justiciable is fancy Supreme Court speak for, we're just not going to get involved. It sure is a shame that this is happening. But then he also said that there's ways the states can deal with it, through courts, through citizen initiatives, through nonpartisan commissions. He listed these as ways that citizens and states could slay the gerrymander themselves.
I would like to go back to the protections one for just a moment, because I realize I forgot to ask kind of specifically what those protections are. For example, I think the one that most people would understand is to make a district contiguous. It shouldn't be all over the place and wrapping around other districts and things like that, that these things should be compact. What are some other examples of the protections that are already existing that Wisconsin and other states should be doing a better job of when they're redrawing their maps?
Right. So contiguity is something that is often taken for granted, but it's actually written into the Wisconsin Constitution in Article 4. So you should be able to, in some sense, to either walk across, or in some cases in Wisconsin, swim across and stay within a district the whole time. That's contiguity. Compactness is it shouldn't be a funny shape, where a circle is sort of this ideal perfect world shape, and then a snaky shape is sort of the opposite. That's also in Article 4. Another thing that's in Article 4 is no splitting of pre-existing political boundaries. And this is an interesting one, because the idea here is that cities and counties shouldn't be split. And my understanding is that in Wisconsin's 72 counties, the legislative map actually has 73 county splits. And so it has more splits than the number of counties that you have in Wisconsin. So that's a lot of splitting. And that appears to be pretty contrary to Article 4, Sections 4 and 5 of the Wisconsin Constitution.
It has to be just perplexing to you sometimes as to, pardon the phrase, how do they get away with it?
Well, let's be fair here. Democrats or Republicans are perfectly capable of drawing a gerrymander. And not too far from you in Illinois, certainly Democrats there have shown quite a capacity for it.
Absolutely. And the question applies both ways.
So there's two parts of this. So the way I would think of it is there's process and there's having standards. And in most states in the United States, sadly, we have a process where legislators draw lines that they themselves then run for office under. And what that means is this process of self-dealing, where they get to draw their own lines, run under those lines, and then draw more lines for themselves a decade later. So process in that way is fundamentally what I would call self-dealing. And then there's having concrete standards. And one of the difficulties, and again, this is just to be fair, that these standards are not always explicitly drawn into law, because the tactics have gotten more extreme, because the software has gotten more advanced, because the partisanship has gotten worse. In these circumstances, these rules get pushed to the limit. And as a result, courts have to catch up, and courts have to take a look and say, well, we said that everyone should be treated uniformly without special laws. We said that communities shouldn't be split. Now let's take a look at the situation and see if these principles have been violated. And so when circumstances change, judges often will adapt to the new circumstances.
Professor Sam Wong, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate hearing this level of background to help us see that what lies ahead of us, this challenge is in fact doable, thanks to the work that folks like you are doing. Thank you again for your time.
Thanks, and best of luck.
And that'll do it for this edition of the Best of Up North News Radio. Whatever's keeping me away today, you can be sure to find me here live most weekdays, 6 to 8 a.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network. To catch our daily work, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and search Up North News WI on your favorite social media sites for updates throughout the day. Because wherever you're listening to us, on the radio, by podcast, on the Civic Media app, or our live social media feeds, when you're here, you're up north. I'm Pat Wrightlaw. Have a great day.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor, but I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is very treatable. These days, things are feeling good, and we're both happier about that. Right, little man? I'll take that as a yes.
Mental health care is working for Simone. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief, a powerful 7.6